I have no doubt that you're entirely correct on that one.
My father used to read my work, and it didn't matter what it was, he would send it back to me and go, "This is completely unrealistic. It's science fiction, you ass." So even from college, I knew that the he and the she, or the he and the he would kick it right back to me, and he'd say, "I don't understand this. This doesn't make sense. Redo it." So I had a lot of practice very early on because of him and because of my mom, who was a grammar Nazi at the time, too. She probably would have taught English in high school had she not done something different. So I had lots of practice with it, and by the time I got around to it, I knew that was one of the pet peeves to look for. Because, I mean, it kind of comes down to pet peeves anyway, with the he, she, or one thing that gets me even online is when somebody is referring to somebody else, like the person who walked across the street, they'll say the person that walked across the street. That refers to an object, not a person. It should be who, and that just irks the hell out of me. So that's something I learned very early on.
Well, my first five novellas that were male, I actually got to cheat. They were done first person, and that alleviated a lot of the problem. The first full novel I did that was male, I did have to deal with the pronoun issues. I guess I deal with it a little bit differently. I hate dialogue tags to begin with, really hate them. So I use a lot of action to show who is speaking. When that action precedes dialogue or even follows it, if that action refers to an individual doing a task, then you know who has said that dialogue. Also, the content of your dialogue can make it very clear, especially early on, if you have established your character. It can make it very clear which one of your characters are speaking. Characters that have certain ways they say things, characters that the audience has already been shown has certain insight to a situation. You can use all those things, those little tricks, to tell the reader which guy or which female in a same-sex pairing is the one speaking and even the one performing the action through dialogue, and vice versa through action for dialogue, if that makes sense.
Okay. And for my own part, I remember my first novel that when it was accepted, and I was going through the editing process for the very first time, my first original work. And I was so sure it was perfect. Because it was the child of my brain, you know? And of course, that's perfect. So how could anything that came out of it be otherwise? And then I'm going through the edits with the track changes function, and I keep seeing this comment, he change. I had no idea. I'm like, he change what? Shouldn't it be he changes? So, yeah, that was fun. I still find it a little bit challenging.
Mm-hmm. It can be.
Absolutely. Unless I want to pepper things with a million uses of somebody's name. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you end up with a lot of references like the doctor, the redhead, you know?
They'll kick it back for that,
and
too.
And that can get kind of tired after a while, too. So it really does force you to become more creative in the way you use descriptions and the way you describe the action. It can be really hard, though. Especially, you know, you send a story out, you contract it, and then it's months later. You'll get your edits back, and you've moved on. You've written like two or three things since. And it's like, okay, we don't really know what you mean by this. And you're looking at it, you're like, no, I don't really know what I mean by that either. Does he have four hands? I just don't know. So, you know, but there are ways around it, and it's just, a lot of it is just taking care of the way that you're arranging your words and arranging your situations.
And one of the things, too, I think, is that when you're writing it, it's so clear in your head what's going on that sometimes that doesn't quite translate onto the page. So I think one of the things you can do is put it away for a couple of days and then go back to it with fresh eyes and read it again. And then you may pick up on a lot more of this stuff where, you know, when you're writing it, you're writing quickly and you're you know what's going on. And but when you go to read it again, now it's like he's got four hands and he's feeling himself up.
Oh, but that's a fun part too. When
hold.
Yeah, I just went totally blank.
Let's say hold that thought. One of the things that I do.
No.
I find that a lot of my work, it tends to be very dialogue heavy, and I think you can get around the he and the she and everything else if you've got a lot of dialogue. Rather
Absolutely.
Than tell it, you're showing it because they're talking about it as it's happening.
Absolutely.
And I think I avoid a lot of problems that way.
Absolutely.
Fair enough. And the first person thing, as you were saying earlier.
Right. Yeah. That's another trick. Another trick is
I'm gonna have to write something in first person one of these days.
It can be fun.
They say first person is really difficult to write. I didn't think it was that bad.
It's gotta be done right or else it turns out to be crap.
Right. The voice has gotta be right.
Yeah.
One of the tricks I actually discovered this week as I was been working on a manuscript and I started reading scenes out of it to a friend of mine. When I read a scene aloud to somebody else, you know, you hear all the time, read the scene out loud, listen to it, and what do you think? Well, it's still your brain, it's still your voice, and you're still going to put words in that may not be there. But if you read that to somebody else and they can follow what you're saying, and they know who says what, then you've done your job. If they tell you they're confused on which character has done what and which character is doing what, then you know you need to go back and fix something. It's good and almost flawless when you can read it aloud to somebody who can take it completely out of context and they understand what you're talking about and who you're talking about.
Yeah, that's true. You know, one thing I find, and I don't know if you guys have found this also, editors sometimes will go through it, and I think they're just picking out instances of where he is referring to two people in his paragraph, regardless of whether or not it's still, because it could still be clear.
Right.
It does not always mean, just because you're using he to refer to two different people, that it's not clear who's talking or who's performing the action. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it is. And I don't think in those instances it needs to be changed, but yet they'll tell you, he confusion, pronoun confusion. I think they just do it like automatically now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they don't necessarily force you to change stuff when you reply to their comments with something along the lines of, I really don't think this is a question of confusion here. One guy's asleep, the other one is not. The one who's awake is the one who's doing this. Is this a problem for you?
Like I said, action shows who is doing what. That can tell your audience a lot. I think honestly, editors don't give readers enough credit sometimes, and you know, make it seem like they can't interpret things, and that they don't have a mind to understand, and they want stuff dumbed down and handed to them. But readers are smarter than a lot of people give them credit for.
Absolutely.
I love when the proofers do it. No, I'm not editing. By the time my work goes to the proofers, and it's gone through line edits, it's gone through the editing process, I'm trying.
Try harder.
By the time it gets to the proofers, all my, you know, T's should be, it's just a matter of crossing the T's and dotting the I's. You're checking for spelling issues, you're checking for grammar issues, making sure that there are periods where there should be periods and commas where there should be and not where they're not supposed to be.
And the occasional continuity error.
Right, the occasional continuity error that maybe the editor...
His eyes were blue in chapter 3.
However, it's not, you're not supposed to be rewriting at that point. And I won't do it when I get comments from freaking, you know, snarky proofreaders. I once had a comment, and I really think the editor just didn't realize it was there when she sent me my PDF back. I don't think she would have sent it through had she seen it, because the proofer wrote in the comments, "I am not impressed." And I said, "Really? Neither am I."
My proofer for my book that comes out the 11th mm-hmm. went through my manuscript. This is after 3 rounds of edits, okay? She went through my manuscript and replaced every single ellipse with 4 periods. I'm like, really? All right, number one, it's 3. Everybody knows this. And number two, are you really that anal? I mean, it was crazy. And she took all of my, like,
two word phrases and made them one word, even though it set off spell check.
Ew.
I know. It was ridiculous. So sometimes your editors aren't right.
Are there any editors in the room?
Yay for you.
But sometimes they're not entirely right.
It depends. Some people just get a little overly ambitious.
And then there's Vanessa. Vanessa will make you cry. She will make you beg for forgiveness, too. But she used to send little snarky remarks, okay? And when you're kind of a new writer, your ego's very frail. And, you know, after about the 10th page, you write back, please quit making fun of me. Please. I can't take anymore. So she quit making fun of me. But, yeah, she's a lot of fun. She's actually one of the best editors ever. But
what I liked is we had Kieran and Tiss and I were in an anthology this past year that came out. And it's my first time that I'd ever had an editor who, when they sent back corrections, basically said, what do you think about changing this? Or can you change this? And Kieran's like, you don't have to do it.
No.
And that was fun.
Cage's previous editorial experience was not pleasant.
A 72-year-old editor who edits in Google Docs in real time with you. And when she doesn't ever admit she's wrong. If you can prove to her that you've got a case, I'm trying to remember the word. She'll acquiesce is the word for it. Pissed me right off. I put it in the next book. I have a character called the editor, who, when she's wrong, will acquiesce.
Doesn't that sound like an awesome place to publish?
Yeah. That's not usually the case, especially in e-publishing. We don't usually... I've never heard of anybody editing in real time. That would just make me crazy.
It's like pulling nails off. It really is.
Seriously. Okay, so now what about this, guys? I know we all write a fair bit, but and I think we all read as well. Do you find yourself noticing things like these pronoun issues when you're reading?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Do they pull you out of the story?
Absolutely.
Only because we've been trained now, you know, to make sure that our work doesn't happen. So when I read it in other people's work, especially when I read it in mainstream publishing's work, that just makes me bananas.
I'm having an issue now where, for some reason, I've been getting asked more and more lately to proofread somebody's work before it'll go to the publisher. Like, J.P. Barnaby had me read one of hers, and she's like, well, can you read this? She says, I'm really kind of afraid to ask you because I'm slightly snarky online. And I'm like, I'll be fine. So she ended up reading my comments, and she posted something on Facebook, and she's like, I hate the fucking word passive now.
Do you guys actually use people to proofread or beta read before you submit?
I use beta readers.
I use regular readers.
I use beta readers. I have other writer friends who I run stuff through. And then the current self-published stuff, that because I've always used a publisher in the past, I found a very competent editor that I can afford. And he runs through it last time. And I still find yours.
Okay.
That's just the way it works.
I was just curious because... I don't do that myself.
Right.
You know, I don't use betas or...
Well, when I was putting to a publisher, I didn't have to go through all that. But when you're doing it yourself, you need as many eyes as possible. So.
You know what else that I learned, I was taught when I started writing not to do, and now when I see it in a book, it totally throws me out, and I see it all the time. Head hopping.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Drives me crazy. I see it all the time. Head hopping, that's where... You switch from one character's point of view to another, like in every paragraph, or sometimes within the same paragraph. Makes me nuts, because I lose track of who's talking to who.
Except my thing is that was actually always fairly standard.
It was.
You would think.
Until, like, maybe, I want to say 10 years ago or so, where...
Very common in romance.
Changing perspectives from paragraph to paragraph stopped being so common. Mm-hmm. I mean, go back and read stuff that came out 15 years ago, and it's all over the place. Yep. And now, I don't know if it's less prevalent now as a reaction to small presses that take more control and are trying to work things out in a way that makes more sense for their readers, or if it's the opposite, but it's much less common now.
I have a problem
with it.
And it
irks people much more than it used to.
You know what? Well, not because I think maybe because we've become accustomed to knowing exactly who's talking at each time. In my opinion, when I'm reading something, you having a fit? What are you doing?
I will pull this car over.
That's right. We'll pull this room right over, mister. I'm so used to now knowing exactly who's talking and not doing this whole head hopping thing that when I see it, it totally throws me out of the story. And there's a way to do it. You can head hop. You can change points of view so long as you're very clear about who's speaking. When you start changing points of view and you're not clear about it, that's when it gets muddled and it gets confusing.
Yeah, but you know, also I think part of the problem right now is that some of the readers don't really know what head hopping means.
You know, I didn't really get a firm grasp of what head hopping was even in my own work until after a convention earlier this year. Patty Logan gave me one of her books to read, mm-hmm. and it was one I don't think she had edited by someone else. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I started reading it, I'm like, what's this shit? I called her, I'm like, okay, I think in the second page you've got a flash forward and a flash backward. I think there's a flash sideways a few sentences down. What is going on here? So, yeah, she was head hopping all over the place.
Okay.
I've seen it done even with some very large and very well-known romance writers where you'll be going along reading a chapter and then, for whatever reason, four lines out of a random paragraph will suddenly be from the hero's point of view versus the heroine who's been dominating the chapter.
Yeah.
So it happens a lot. Even the best and the biggest do
it. There's one big-time author. I read everything she writes. As a matter of fact, I've got her new book on pre-order, and she does it. And I'm not going to mention her name, but she does it. Drives me crazy.
I suspect.
And I go smack, smack, smack.
I have a sneaking suspicion about who this might be. But I'll
ever,
ask you later.
Have you ever emailed her and told her?
I read everything she has. I love her stories. I love her writing. I love the universe that she's created. Don't stop head hopping.
Did you email her and tell her?
I should.
Sign okay. Tiz's name.
Well, it's not. You can. I'm fine with that. I don't mind. I like people hating me. Makes me more interesting.
And just slightly off topic.
Yeah, slightly.
Shocking, right?
How much further are we going to go? We're already on a road trip.
There are things that totally irritate the crap out of me in other people's books. And one of those things is then and than. One is temporal. One is comparative. How do you mix them up? Defiantly and definitely. I defiantly agree. Okay. No.
Yeah, try writing with her, okay?
And spell check will tell me, though, that I'm supposed to write accouterments. There are no accoutrements in spell check land, but there are a whole lot of heaping accouterments. I the first time this happened to me, I sat at my computer for about 5 minutes trying to stop laughing as my brain created all sorts of odd scenarios in which there would be an accouterment.
Last job that I had where I was working
Minty
at a place
Fresh.
To...
According to spell check, you do.
It's taking us exactly 28 minutes to spiral out of control.
I'm surprised it took that long.
I will tell you that the last job that I had where I was working for a place that did social media, my boss had a word-a-day calendar, and he watched a lot of reality TV, and it was the second week there. He comes running into the office, and one day he says, "Do you ever watch whatever channel it was on?" I said, "No, I don't." And he says, "There was this reality show last night, and they had these midget emus." They had what? He's like, these midget emus. They had midget birds. He's like, no. People wear the dark makeup and look really sad all the time. Emos. That's the same guy who used to pronounce Shuang Fei around the office.
Shuang Fei. Shuang Fei.
Okay, back to
I'm telling you, this whole moderating thing was a bad, bad, bad idea. Although hopefully it's entertaining for you guys. Bring on the chaos.
Hey, that would be a new way to distinguish stuff. We could just say midget emus.
Authors screwing around.
For real.
You've actually got a question,
Alyssa. Okay, yeah, I actually was about to throw this open for questions from you guys if everybody here is done with the crazy train that was me.
The wet wipes guy.
Okay. Yes, sir, Mr. Wet Wipes.
I just wanted...
Yep, it's on.
I just wanted to add that if you really want to see the true victims of spell check, watch your television with the closed captioning turned on.
Absolutely. Yeah.
No joke. Yeah. It's like, wait a minute. Why are they talking about a rabid weasel? Oh, collapsible easel. Why did I not get that?
Anyone? Questions? Comments?
Off topic or on topic?
It doesn't matter. Anything you want to talk about.
Okay. Okay, go ahead. I was going to ask a question.
Speak into the microphone, young man.
Thank you. Characters whose gender is initially perceived as different from the perspective of the reader, or from the perspective of everyone else in the book for that matter, as what it turns out to be. For example, trans characters sometimes, or gender fluid characters. How do you even begin to do that without being completely confused?
I haven't written trans. I know. I think Adrienne has. So she can answer that.
And I wrote a crossdresser.
Right. I did write drag queens at one point. And what I did was when my character was in drag, it was referred to. He was referred to as a she. And then when not in drag, it was he. And the way it was written, it wasn't confusing.
There are a couple answers to this, and I can't remember the words off the top of my head, but if you go to a few sites and look it up, you'll see what I'm talking about. They have alternative words for trans or fluid, gender fluid. I cannot for the life of me right now remember those pronouns. There you go. Then feel free to use them. If you don't want to use them and you just want to use with the misunderstanding, if you're writing in third person limited and you're coming from a general character's point of view, then you want to use that character's perception because you're completely limited to what that character perceives, all right? Now, if you're writing omniscient, and most people don't write omniscient anymore because it can be very dry, but if that's what you want to write, then as the narrator, you can give the audience all the information you want to give them. But the dialogue and reactions of your character are going to also tell the audience what they perceive. It's just much easier and much simpler and tells just as good of a story to keep it to one individual character's per chapter or section's point of view in third person limited. That way, you're only dealing with their perceptions and you won't have to worry about everybody else's. When you're dealing with first person, again, the narrator, it's going to be their interpretation and how they see the other character. You're going to be limited to what they think. So sometimes your audience is not going to know, is what I'm telling you. Your audience is only going to know what your character knows. And until your character discovers it, your audience won't either. You can drop in hints. You can do all sorts of things that maybe will lead the audience to know before your character discovers it. But your audience can't know until the character who's giving the point of view knows.
Uh-huh. Third person limited.
Right.
Using the pronoun that the person's perspective would use. But uh-huh. In dialogue, characters that perceive the gender otherwise would use the pronoun they see that character as. And I've had beta readers come back to me and say, this is completely confusing. What gender is this character?
Okay.
And I don't want to just go into exposition it, you
know? Right. But let me ask you this. What made that individual character, the gender fluid one, for example, what made your one set of characters in that chapter perceive them as male or female or whatever the opposite sex of what your perspective character in your third person limited did?
In one case, identification. In another case, prior knowledge that was not in exposition.
Okay.
In a third case, just assumptions.
But if your character is there who perceives this incorrectly and you've got other characters using a different pronoun, if someone was calling someone a she that you thought was a guy, what would be your first reaction? You would ask him, why are you calling that dude a girl? It's, you know, it's going to be your character who is confused is going to want to know why he's calling that person the wrong pronoun. He's not going to keep referring them to a she when everybody else might be calling him a he.
People really do this, actually.
I know. I realize that. But see, you get to play God. You get to bend the rules a little bit, and you can make your character smarter than that, you know, if you choose to do that. If not, then have your other characters who perceive them correctly kind of let the audience know that they don't exactly think the narrator or the point of view character is all that bright. But you can pull it off. You absolutely can pull it off.
But some of that is also going to depend on your target readership.
Absolutely.
If it's not a group of people who understand the pronouns that you're using, they're going to be lost.
Right.
You know, so it's not really your job to educate the masses, but if you're determined that you want to use these particular words, then early on, throw it in there. Have somebody say, I don't know what that means. And then explain, have the character explain what it means. And then just use it from there on. Not like in any, well, you know.
Another way to do it.
This is brought to you by the letter Z.
Oh, and for the record, people, purple is my favorite number of the alphabet.
Some publishers will also let you put in a glossary. So if there's, you know, words that, you know, if you're using a lot of technical terms or you're using a lot of technical terms, you might want to consider doing that if it's words that the general populace may not be familiar with. And if you're targeting the general populace, you may want to educate them that way. This way you're not doing a whole bunch of info dump in the book.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. Yes, the horny girl right there.
So returning to what you were saying earlier about trying to replace pronouns by referring to someone as the doctor or the redhead, or my favorite is when people try to come up with names for characters with unusual hair colors like brunette and silver red and whatever. It just makes me facepalm every time. So should you just completely avoid that or use it sparingly? What kinds, you know, obviously making up words would be disruptive to the storytelling, but you know, how much do you think is too much, and what other things can you do to avoid having to do so much of that?
I can see using it sparingly, because I think moderation is the key here with everything. When you're using epithets, and that's I think what we're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to use them very sparingly, because it's not great writing to use them constantly. You know, the doctor went here, the cowboy went there, the cowboy and the doctor did it in the bathroom. It's not good form.
My rule of thumb with that is actually use that stuff often enough to remind yourself of who the character is while you're writing it. because while it takes you a while to write it, and maybe you're writing like four or five different things at a time and so on and so forth, at some point you're going to be working on this piece again and going, wait, what does he do? What color hair? Oh, man. Does he have blue eyes? And chances are that many of your readers aren't reading that thing cover to cover in one sitting. You know, so as often as you put something in there to remind yourself of who this character is, that's about as often as they need to be reminded of who that character is.
Which isn't really very, it's not like every page.
No.
It's not very often.
And if you feel like
getting
to the point,
maybe like
of
every other chapter, if that. You know, and when it's absolutely necessary, when there is no way of using a name or some other signifier to indicate who it is that is completely not awkward, you can toss in, you know, the blonde.
Yeah, but don't go like starting to make like all these really fancy descriptive terms, because then you start going into purple prose and that's just ugly. So
I wanted to ask on clarification here. I'm not sure, but I also think she means like, and like I said, correct me if I'm wrong, but when you have a character not necessarily referring to their profession or their status quo or whatever, but like a physical characteristic, like leather jacket.
Yeah, well, other things, you know, also like referring to them, differentiating them by age, the older man, the younger man,
right,
or, you know, anything like that. Also, not necessarily just the doctor, you know.
I do some of that myself, but I never do it with a main character or once they know the character's name. And sometimes you don't know. For example, I just have started finishing up a novel, and in the first entire chapter, this guy has hooked up with another guy in a back room of an art gallery. And through this, I don't know, 20 pages, he does not know this man's name. And that was pretty much the end of the
chapter. Having sex for 20 pages?
not all at once. it progressed.
See,
from,
that's the part that struck me as odd.
It progressed from the back room, the cab, and then the art studio. So, yeah.
And nowhere in that 20 pages were they able to catch their breath?
That was the point.
Hey, oh God, a mark.
No, actually, introductions were made in the shower. You know, they introduced each other. Guy asked him, tell me about yourself. What do you want to know? How about your name?
Oh, nice to meet you.
exactly.
That's when you give them the same name.
Or the same word.
No, the same name.
I have no filter. Oh.
No, but you can, it depends on the situation. You're going, huh? It's going to be complimentary colors.
She wants to read all 20 pages of that.
We're singing in the rain.
I have people chomping at the bit for that one so far. Oh, no, it's quiet.
Right here. Nope. Right up front.
Up front, please.
I have a question about the third person limited versus the third person omniscient. How can you manage the third person omniscient and not go head hopping?
Just omniscient. Just omniscient, not third person omniscient. It would just be omniscient.
Okay.
And then third person limited. Mm-hmm. You know. Do you want to explain that or do y'all want to do it?
Have at it.
Okay. Now, granted, I admit I'm not the best on definition, and I get screwed up definitions all the time. If you have omniscient, you're writing like you're God. You know what's going on in everybody else's head, okay? If you're writing third person, you're a narrator, or your narrator voice is limited to one individual's experiences. They observe and see everything that happening to the other characters, but the point of view is limited to the character you're focusing on. So if you're talking about Jill, okay, and Jill is, I don't know, going on vacation, you're only going to know, your reader is only going to know what Jill thinks, feels, sees, smells, all right? She can observe everybody around her, but she can't know what they're thinking, seeing, feeling. She can observe the reaction, but that's all she can do. If you're writing omniscient, your reader can know everything, even things your characters don't know. If you're doing omniscient, you're going to have head hopping. That's why it's not really done very often anymore. It's also, in my experience, omniscient is very shallow. You really don't get to know the character. It's like you're knowing the story, but you don't ever really know the character. That's why most writers write third person limited.
Right.
It's because it really allows you to become attached to the character and feel them and know them. And all you have to do is remember to stay in one point of view at a time. One person's sensory experiences at a time is a better way to put it. And then when you start a new chapter, or you divide it off to, you've done three pages on one person, but you want to switch something to show a different experience, you put your divider in there. Usually they'll use little stars, to start a new section of paragraphs, and then you change. And that way it keeps things very simple.
Yeah, because when it's omniscient, it's you know everything about every character, but it's detached.
Exactly.
And I'm just going to jump in for 1 second to say that our last panel member has finally arrived after some difficulty in making his way here. Please introduce yourself to the group.
This is weird sitting back here. Hi, sorry I'm kind of late. I probably shouldn't be up here at this point in time, but you guys said come on up, so whatever.
You snuck in behind me. I wouldn't be paying attention. I'm sorry.
It's all right. Don't worry about it. I spaced. It's been that kind of weekend. My name is Sasha Levitch. I'm an author and editor. I have been writing for 14 years. Yeah, already. Over at Sizzler Editions, I have done numerous books in a variety of subgenres of erotica and romance. What else do I usually say? Oh, I edit for Sizzler Editions as well, and that's pretty much it.
Welcome. Yay. Now, we more or less exhausted the original topic of this panel, so we are now at this point taking pretty much open questions about whatever from the people here. So, who's next? If nobody raises their hand, I will pick someone. There we go.
So when you're talking about changing point of view and said, add a space or asterisk or whatever, mm-hmm. How do you usually indicate, do you just do that and assume that people will figure out, oh, it's switched now, or do you start the next section by using that person's name?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes and all. Yeah.
All of the above. but myself, primarily, I will, within the first sentence or two, following a scene or POV switch, put in something about, who it is. Whether it's, the stars were pretty this time of year, Andrew thought with a smile. Something. And it's not that difficult to do. And as long as you throw it in there early on after your shift, people may not register it completely consciously, but they know that it has changed, so it leads to a lot less confusion.
Okay.
And the big thing there you want to keep in mind is when you do that transitional shift from one person's head to the other, that needs to happen in that particular character's voice. If a character A is snarky and really out of line with a lot of what they say and do, and then you have another character in the book, character B, for lack of a better word, and character B is a good, nice, kind person, all of your dialogue, all of your speech, all of your words in character A's head need to sound and feel like character A. Character B has their own quirks and traits and language they use to determine how they view the world. No, you were okay the first time. It's okay, I'll be hidden.
Now you're just framed.
Sweet.
Wouldn't be the first time.
Are you implying that he can't get in enough trouble without someone setting him up?
Oh, he does.
That's what I thought.
The framing is just fun for the rest of us.
And when you're trying to establish who's saying what, kind of like whenever you start a book or any story, you always start with action. You start in the middle of something. And that way, it also allows the reader to immediately know who it's involving. And that will tell you a lot as well. So, But I actually have a question, because it going back to the pronoun thing. I'm just curious, because I know how I do it, some other people do it. When you do have paragraphs, okay, and you do have, like, for example, two male characters, and let's say you have an action, and your secondary, we'll start with Bob, has an action, and Joe has a reaction, and you end, okay, with Bob's response, okay? The next sentence over, do you automatically use Joe again, or do you feel comfortable using, because you've used Bob's name last, to go into he or his after that point?
It, for me, depends on whether Bob is going to continue speaking,
right,
or whose perspective that particular section is in to begin with.
Right.
You know, so it can go either way.
Okay.
It just depends on the passage itself and what's going to flow better and what just seems to work better for me.
And what about you, Kieran?
Same thing. I think, you know, if I made, I know in my head, you know, who's going to be continuing
right
to speak, and that's who that he will.
So y'all comfortable putting a person's name twice in a sentence?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay. I've done that.
If it works there.
Yeah.
If it's necessary.
But do you read the sentence often aloud, or? To make sure that it doesn't sound stilted,
right,
or crappy,
right? Well, the reason why I asked this is because of I actually had an editor want me to insert names more often when it really didn't need to be done, and to me it sounded strange, but that's why I was asking, because
yes,
I wanted to know
if it's necessary.
If it's necessary,
there are times when it is.
You also have body language clues. A lot of people use dialogue tags, and I tell my authors that if I find the dialogue tag in your story, I'm going to burn you. Because they're inefficient. I believe they're horrible. I believe readers don't need them. You don't even see them. And they do nothing for the story at all. So you can use action tags and body language to tell more of your story and get it across. This way, again, back to the point that I made earlier about a particular person's worldview and how they function, I tend to move around a lot unless I have a cigar in my hand, in which case I tend to be still. That continuing with that paragraph with that action tag, if your other character doesn't smoke or hates it or has a reaction that's contrary to character A's response or my first action, then it's going to tell you, and you can avoid using the names.
Right. And there's a going along with dialogue tags. Now, granted, this is just my opinion. When you do use a dialogue tag, you want it to be as inconspicuous as possible. The only way to do this is, and I know a lot of people use other words, but I do feel strongly about this, and it's something I've really pushed myself recently to do. Don't use whispered, don't use shouted, don't use softly, you know, don't use anything that other than the word said, because you want it to blend into the background.
I disagree
I
so much.
Disagree
well.
That.
That's okay.
That my loins are quivering.
She said with a smile.
Yep.
My loins are quivering softly in disagreement.
If I can avoid the using the word said in a story, I will maybe use it twice, and that is it through an entire book.
You don't want to use it at all if you don't have to. That's what I'm saying.
You don't ever have to.
Why?
I hate that
word. And I agree. I mean, that's my point. But if someone absolutely feels like they have to use a dialogue tag, don't use anything but something simple to go into the background.
Well, there's that, because if you're gonna, how do I say this? If you're the kind of writer who reads enough and understands the craft and knows how to use a thesaurus, then it becomes pretty easy to avoid having to use words like whispered, because the reader sees a mental movie in their head.
Exactly.
And when they see a movie in their head, they're going to imagine, if you've done your job as a writer, how the person is speaking. Because you've
exactly.
done your job to create the character, to create their mannerisms, to create their everything, so we know when they're being aggressive, they're obviously shouting. Well, the dialogue tells us as well. And every now
That's
and then...
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Are you aware of the fact that you're sitting on this panel and basically just now said that everybody who uses a dialogue tag is inept at their craft?
Kiernan, field this one for me. What do you call it? What?
No, I'm pretty sure Kiernan's waiting for an answer on this one, too.
Because she gave me
she
a name.
Said.
Huh?
What she said.
That's what she said. I love it.
Depends. Truthfully, it depends on what house you're publishing with and what your editor is. I did write a story for Sasha first for Renaissance, and he made me go in and take out every fucking, dialogue.
Because you're a better writer than that.
Every single one of them.
Well, you know what? Good and bad are in large part a question of personal preference, and I think you're full of shit. All right,
that's fine.
She said softly.
Let her have it.
I don't use dialogue tags that often anymore.
But see, this really...
I use them on occasion. I just think that sometimes it's necessary.
I agree.
And this really just goes to show you that even within the same genre, people have completely different opinions about what they're doing and the way that it should be done. There is no one true, right, 100% perfect way.
Absolutely.
All right? Everybody is going to have their own thing that they're going to bring to it, and there is nothing wrong with that, and anybody who tells you that there is can fuck themselves.
Can I just say
she said.
Softly. Not so softly.
Or she said defiantly.
I think that the key here is that you don't want to see it in every freaking dialogue sentence.
Absolutely.
Every sentence of dialogue. You don't want to see, she said defiantly, he cried softly.
Exactly.
And we totally hijacked your question. Please continue.
Well, I just wanted to say, as a reader, I actually really like dialogue tags, so I don't have to go back and say, wait, Mark, Brian. Bah! That was Brian. I mean, sometimes it's just really convenient to be told who the hell is speaking. And also, I like knowing how people are speaking. I mean, like with Whisper, how the hell am I supposed to know? You know, it cues me in to not have to really, it's a quick reference. You know, I'm reading erotica. I'm not doing it because I'm going to write a dissertation on the damn thing.
That's true.
If you're going to be doing something with that one hand, it's not going to be taking notes.
My brain may be not, you know, completely on the highest analytical level at this point in time. Give me a few cues. You know, his whispers are excellent. I really want to know those things when I'm reading erotica. It's different if I'm reading, you know, The Great Gatsby or something, you know, which I'm unlikely to be doing.
And I'm interrupting you again. We have approximately 4 minutes left, so we can take as many questions as we can fit in 4 minutes.
So, very quickly, an actual question. I wonder if any of you ever use word counts, like histograms for your words, to find out if you're saying, for instance, she murmured a few hundred too many times.
There are words that I'll actually go in and I'll do like the find function on because I use Word for everything I write, to find out how many I have used. Because words like that, because you could probably take out all of them.
Yeah.
And I tend to use it a lot, so I will go in and I'll find those and usually take them all out.
Same thing here.
And I don't do that at all because I think that's part of my editor's job.
Oh, shit.
Your editors must love you.
What? I do. They go through, they count all this stuff, they highlight all this stuff, and then they give me a comment that says, you used this 247 times in 16 pages.
That'd be fair.
Let's change some of that, shall we?
My editor's the same thing, but it's usually... So I've gone through that story and run it through one of those online editors to look for all the many times I've overused a bunch of words. I'll nail every one of them that I can. My editors find the ones that get replaced with different words and end up doing more work for me that way. But they do expect me to come in as an author and not have this problem, realistically. But it's just part and parcel for the course, and it doesn't matter if you've been in the business 10 minutes or 10,000 years. It just happens because you don't see the story the same way after the 15,000th time.
What I'll do is I'll actually read an entire book out loud once I'm ready, or once I feel I'm ready to send it to an editor, and I'll do it in one sitting, or maybe two. And I'll go through, and if I notice a word coming through, I will highlight it. And when I'm done, I will go through, and I'll do the search and find for all the words that are highlighted and see exactly how many times I have used it and go through and correct the problem.
What I found helps, actually, especially in finding, like, and this is more technical than what than the craft, but you know how you'll have, like, double words, and you'll have the, and, you know, right. sometimes mm-hmm. spell check doesn't pick them up. What I like to do, and don't ever just rely on spell check. That's like a really bad idea. What I'll do is I'll...
Or you'll end up with a whole bunch of accouterments.
Accouterments. What I do is I'll start reading the document, and I'll have the computer read it aloud to me as I'm reading it.
Excellent.
And by hearing it and seeing it, that's how I pick up a lot of the crap that has passed through the filters.
But also different houses have different preferences. So, like, one publisher might not mind if you... flagrantly abuse a particular word.
Yeah.
Whereas another one will have a huge problem with it because they just don't care for it.
Well, it also depends, too, on how you're using. If you're doing it for effect, specific effect, you can get away with it, but it has to be a really good reason.
I also find that I don't notice that I use certain words over and over and over until I'm in edits.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's not even my editor who notices it because I'm going through it line by line and I'm like, wait a minute, I just said that. Four sentences ago.
And you've had the problem where you've had four editors look at your book before, and you all miss it because it just happens.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, I had that recently. So, I mean, it's...
Yeah. Yep, okay. Back.
I had this issue when reading stuff and then later realizing when writing why it was so hard. Clothing. I don't know, just figuring out whose clothing is being talked about when it's being removed. Always seems to be, I'm like, wait, did he take off his own pants or the other guy's pants? I just, how do you handle figuring out?
He's that good.
I tend to avoid clothing. A step-by-step description of the disrobing, simply because if they're getting undressed, they're going to fuck, and I want to get to the good stuff.
And by the 20th
page... I'm sorry,
page.
Show of hands. Who here really cares to hear about how somebody takes off their pants before sex? Really? Do you care if they fold them carefully or throw them in a corner?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it can convey a lot about the situation.
Don't take one of these when you leave. Got mad love for you, but uh-uh. All right. Unfortunately, we are officially 1 minute over. So I want to thank all of you for showing up at 10 o'clock on a Sunday night and listening to all of us, but especially me, ramble.
You should be a radio show host.